Hello and welcome to this week's Africa Now show. I'm Paula Slea and I'm with our team in the Kenyan coastal city of Mombasa. This week we explore the rise of terrorism and extremism in Africa, and for this reason we've chosen Kenya. This East African country has seen some of the worst terror attacks in recent history. Most of the attacks are carried out by the Al-Shabaab militant group and its supporters, who cross over from Somalia to the east. Two of the worst terror attacks in recent Kenya history were at the Westgate Shopping Center and the Dusit Hotel Complex in the capital, Nairobi. We were refused permission to take our cameras inside by the strict security protocols in place in the country, but we did manage to bring you the following reports. Ben Mulwa, you were one of the more than 150 people injured during the Westgate Shopping Centre attack. This September marks 10 years since 67 people were killed. Where were you when that attack happened?
Thank you so very much also for having me on this program this morning. As I told you, my name is Ben Mulwa. I am a strategy and governance consultant based here in Nairobi. And for me, September 21st, 2013 was a Saturday like any other. I remember being a Saturday, you know, you don't have a very tight program. I was to meet up a friend of mine actually at 10 o'clock. Unfortunately, he had a problem with his phone. So he used a friend's phone to call me and inform me that he'll be getting his iPhone repaired at a shop. The iPhone has a repair center just right next to Westgate. I'm not sure whether that's the case still today. And we made our way through the traffic, and I was at the security barrier. We were just driving, and our intention was to drive to the rooftop where there were a couple of restaurants for lunch. And while at the security barrier, at that point is when we had one very loud bang. Much later, I came to gather, I think it's one of the grenades they threw into the art cafe, which was located on the ground floor. And after the loud bang, it was followed by gunshots. And we were three of us in the car, and we debated amongst ourselves, and our thinking was perhaps it's just a robbery, or maybe police trying to get to some thugs or something. One of the security guards, I remember, was also hiding right next to me. In fact, we were just separated by a small shrub of flowers. And it's as I was trying to take cover, because where I was certain a bullet could not find me from the road. That's when I saw two men walk into the mall. There were two drive-in, and that is two lanes to drive in and two lanes drive out. And that's when I saw two men walking, one through the drive-in and the other through the drive-out. And I remember very clearly, the particular guy who came through the drive-in was wearing the Arafat coverage on his head. And he had bullets strapped around him with a rifle, an AK-47. And that's when it hit me that this is probably more serious than I'd initially thought, but there was hardly any time to do anything. Now, you are here, and the particular gunman is like maybe 3 or 4 meters away. So you cannot run, there's nothing you can do. And it was quite a moment for me. So what I remember vividly was he took aim at the security guard who was hiding right next to me, who was taking cover right next to me. And he was shot in the head. And I remember blood just splattering all over the place. And now I didn't know what to do. So my thinking was they are only targeting the security guards. And it was in those moments, in those seconds, that I saw him aim his rifle at me. And you see, where I was only separated by my car, which was right next at the barrier. And all I remember is I heard a very loud bang. It was louder than anything else I had heard. And at that particular point, I didn't know whether I had been shot or not. After that shot, I could hear the gunshots proceed from where I was, and I could tell from where I was lying. One of the gunmen went to the basement of the mall, and the other gunman went to the rooftop, because you remember there was mayhem at the rooftop when there was a cooking competition by children. And I remained in that position for a couple of minutes. And I wasn't sure whether I had been shot or not. All I remember is I could see, because from the position I was in, I was lying down, but with my legs folded, I could see a lot of blood on my right leg. And because I could not feel any pain, my imagination was this must have been perhaps the blood that was splattered from the victim who had been shot in front of me. And I saw one person open the doors from their car and walk out of the mall with their hands raised up. Then I saw a couple of other people walk out. And it's at that point I thought perhaps it's safe, maybe it's rescue that has arrived. And I walked out with my hands raised up. I was limping actually at that particular point, but I managed to get out of the gates. When I got outside the gates, that's when I saw there was a team of like three or four guys. I will never allow terrorists to dictate how I live, because to me those are cowards. I mean, if you have a grievance with the Kenyan government, or you have a you think you are man enough, go to face our military, or go face our police.
But why is terrorism on the rise in Africa, and who is responsible for it? Before we can investigate these questions, we take a look at who are the major groupings.
In East Africa, Al-Shabaab was established in 2006 as a splinter group of Al-Qaeda. Its leaders sought autonomy in their operations to counter the West. Rising from the impoverished ranks of Somalia's disenfranchised, the group's goal is to create an Islamic State and to combat the increasing influence of the United States in Somalia, an important country geographically in the Horn of Africa, that opens the Gulf of Aden to the Middle East. While in West Africa, the same story unfolded in Nigeria, where Boko Haram, which means Western education is forbidden, has extended its reach since its rise in the early 2000s. The group is responsible for kidnappings, most notably in 2014, when they took hostage nearly 300 schoolgirls in Chibok, geared at making the country ungovernable in an effort to push Western influence out of Nigeria. As for the Islamic State, despite their defeat in the Middle East, their numbers and frequency of attacks continues to grow in Mozambique, as Western countries show no signs of slowing down their operations for natural resources and increased profits from gas, gold, diamonds and ruby extraction. The violence and clashes are likely to accelerate.
Kenya boasts the United Nations headquarters of counter-terrorism in Africa. From Kenya, the UN monitors and conducts operations against preventing the spread of terrorism on the continent. But very often, it is these operations that perpetuate terrorism in Africa. I spoke with Dr. Hassan Hanachi, an expert in strategic affairs, and asked him for his opinion. Thank you so much for joining us here on RT Africa.
Thanks for having me.
Doctor, at the moment, what are the current trends that you notice with regards to terrorism?
Oh, there has been a change, especially considering the number of dynamics that have taken place in the Middle East with the defeat of ISIS, especially in its ability to hold territory. Now, what you're seeing is expansion of ISIS in other forms. By setting up provinces within the continent, especially in the Sahel and in the Horn and Central Africa region.
Why can't the Americans get a handle on terrorism when they pour so much money into countering it?
While efforts by the United States, especially the renewed efforts under the Biden administration to counter Al-Shabaab in particular, are laudable, it's extremely limited, in part because the critical aspects, which is the developmental aspect, is not being considered sufficiently. So territories that have been liberated from al-Shabaab, for instance, are not exactly being followed up by the soft power that requires that those communities are no longer left vulnerable, either to local warlords or by other extremists. And so focusing on the hard power alone has limits, and that has been demonstrated. And I think it's going to require, for instance, the United States, as well as those who are fighting terrorism in Africa, to rethink the strategy holistically.
The West is fighting or trying to fight terrorism in East Africa. Does this ironically not increase terrorism in this part of the world?
Over-reliance on hard power has a direct impact, of course, on fueling the seeds of dissent and grievance, in part because some of the kind of damage, for instance, that are done by drones are exploited by al-Shabaab. And it's not unfounded, because when you kill civilians in the process of conducting a mission, it's fodder for terrorist organization and terrorist ideology. Now, if that again is not followed by a different mechanism that can be able to inspire hope, of course, what you'll be doing is driving people further into the arms of terrorist organizations, as opposed to doing the opposite.
And so what is happening? Are people being driven into the hands of terrorists?
To some degree, some of the methods employed are driving people into extremism. But on a whole, I think if those engaged in fighting terrorism are going to have a holistic approach, especially the economic and political aspects, to ensure this rule of law, to ensure this economic development, economic growth, to ensure this peace and stability, I think that is the only long-term solution.
And what kind of hard power, what kind of operations is the West fueling in East Africa that is sending people into the arms of terrorists?
The West, of course, is conducting a number of operations. Some are covert, some are overt. Now, some are attributed directly, or at least, you know, the West will acknowledge, for instance, the United States may acknowledge conducting certain operations in taking out terror leaderships. And some of it, of course, you know, no one claims responsibility for it. But those especially hard power operations that takes or involves civilian casualties are exactly the kind of activities or actions that actually fuel terrorism.
Are you disappointed in the way the West is handling the increase in terrorism?
I would say the efforts are insufficient. While some of it, especially in taking out leaderships of al-Shabaab, is something that is, you know, is positive, I think to the extent that there is no sufficient economic and institutional engagement to ensure long-term stability, it's disappointing. To the extent that now the world and the Western world that has been extremely involved, especially in places such as the Horn of Africa and Somalia, the current geopolitics seem to have sucked all the energy outside the priorities on the continent in the Horn. Of course, it's something disappointing, and it's something that I think that the region has to call to attention, that those players need to play a more robust role if we actually have, or if we have to pursue genuine and lasting peace, not just in Africa, but I think in the global South, as we have seen in recent years.
If you were to give some kind of prognosis to the future of terrorism in Africa, the story looks bleak or positive?
I would say it's somewhere in between. It depends with the kind of efforts that are going to be made, especially in the next 1 or 2 years. If there's going to be concerted effort and the international community, as well as the continent, refocuses its energy on fighting terror, there's a likelihood that the trajectory is going to be positive. If, on the other hand, we get consumed with other issues of geopolitics and take our eye off the terror threat, it's going to consume the continent, and that is where the fear lies.
A few decades ago, groups like Boko Haram, Al-Shabaab and Islamic State were so small that they were not considered a threat to regional security. But today, all of that has changed. I visited the old town of Mombasa, which was discovered by the Portuguese back in the 1400s, to ask people there what they felt. I'm in Mjiwakele, the old town of Mombasa, where the narrow streets, the religious flags, and the fact that there is a mosque on almost every street corner lends itself to the fact that so much extremism comes from these quarters. In fact, we have a police presence because it's unsafe for foreigners and journalists to be in this part of the town.
The issue and the problem of terrorism, I should blame it on politics, wrong politics, bitter people who are bitter, and lazy people, and religion.
Most people here, do they like America or they don't like America?
Here where I am now, where my shop is located here, I can say like 55% to 60% don't like America.
Why not?
Just because of the involvement. Again, mostly their perspective is about religion. Maybe if I'm to mention, you see, the thing that American, what they do against Muslim countries or America, like America supporting like Israel, things like that. You see, they find that they're being pushed. That's why they react in this way.
To be frank, from what we've seen so far, it's a bit vague. We see more of the Kenyan security operators within the country doing a lot more where they could have been assisted with the Americans to make sure that the safety of all citizens in Kenya is looked after. But to be frank, if you ask me if it's felt, it's not felt.
Why don't you want to show us your face? And do many people here feel the same way you feel?
Normally, it's not nice to talk about other country, and then even my country is not good. Sometimes your face might be accusation to for saying bad to for someone else.
Why does America want Kenya? America is not really fighting terrorism, so why is America involved?
Americans say they are fighting terror, but I don't think they are fighting. If they are fighting terror, they should be based in Kenya, helping Kenya. Every day, those Al-Shabaab are coming inside, they are destroying our country. They are taking our people. Every day, sometimes they went to the hospital, they took the doctors. They are taking, every day they are putting bombs under the roads and then cars are destroyed. I don't think they are helping while they are outside there. They should come here and help.
So what are they doing? Why are they here if they're not helping?
They are here to funding, give us money, but to stay with us, to show us this is a terror, this is what they don't do.
Both those attacks were carried out by Somali militants. But the Mogadishu government no longer wants American assistance in fighting terror. It has come up with a unique way of dealing with the problem. Dr. Fatuma Ali of the US International University in Africa agrees with the approach.
I think the approach of the government is a hard approach, using the military, because now this is like combat, you know, fiercely bombing them, you know, and attacking their strongholds, and so it's really, it's a combat, direct contact through fighting that he used is to work with local militias in different areas where these local militias are not in the same ideology as Al-Shabaab. They do not really adhere to a very strict dogmatic misinterpretation of maybe the text or the religion. So you have pockets of some Sufi, Sufi Islam, some groups that are also following the Islamic political ideology, but from a Sufi perspective. So they are not entwined with the ideology of Al-Shabaab. So they are able to help the government to push out Al-Shabaab from certain region. And the other problem will be, even if they uproot the Al-Shabaab from these places, there'll be a vacuum of governance, of leadership. So the challenge is, how will the Somali government establish its presence in all those areas? Secondly, the confidence. They need to build confidence in the people that they are bringing permanent stability. That you remove Al-Shabaab, no other group will come, and there will be a true reconciliation, and then the country will move forward. So I think that is also, the other thing also is how to deal with internal politics when it comes to clanism, because that is always one of the bedrock of politics in Somalia. And I think also this is what groups like Al-Shabaab capitalize on. So their leadership will always have their loyalty of their people, of their clansmen and women, yeah.
The fight against terror is not always what it seems. In West Africa, the terrorist group Boko Haram was started by extremists who believed the Nigerian government had been influenced by Western governments. The group was largely unknown on the international stage until nearly 300 schoolgirls were captured by it back in 2014. Most of these girls have never been found, but Africa Now tracked down one. This is her story.
A san bi san ina hannun Boko Haram ne mutanen Mamanur sune suka dauke ni sai suka aje ni a wajen na zauna shi tsawon shekara daya kafin nan sai suka sake ni na dawo sun sa mu mun yi auren dole sun saida mu da farko sun saida mu mun zama bayi daga bayi sai suka sa mu kai auren dole ba abin da muke muna zama co saka zaman gida kawai sai dai mu je mu yi karatun islamiyya sai mu dawo shikenan ba abin da muke yi an sa mu zama musulmi na dole an tubar da mu su ne suka saka mu muka zama auren dole da suka saka mu lokacin da ba mai kamata mai aure ba suka saka mu kai auren dole na daya makarantar mu ya zo ya yanke shine gaskiya to inda rai zaka sa tsammani haka rai shine kawai mutane da bindiga ban taba ganin su ba farkon gani na ne wancan kuma mutane da ban san su ba shi yasa guduwa muka yi sai sojoji suka zo suka karbe mu yes sir since 2015 zuwa 2015 ne muka gudu mun gudu daga jeji mun zo ta hanyar baga almost dai kusan january kamar haka a january kamar haka ina gani lokacin muka gudu muka zo mun tashi da daddare ne da ni da ita da wata muka tashi muka shawara za mu gudu mu da ita muka yi kwana biyu a hanya muka dawo cikin gari da muka zo cikin gari wasu mutane suka ɗauke mu a wani ƙauye muka yi sati biyu kafin nan muka zo cikin baga daga cikin baga muka zauna kafin nan baga aka tashi sai muka gudu zuwa mangono daga mangono kafin nan muka gudu sai muka zo Maiduguri gaskiya mun sha wahala ta wajen NGO haka taimakon iyaye da addu'a muka zo muka dan samu rayuwar ya dan canja ya different ba kamar da ba a da gaskiya ko wahala ma ga trauma ga kana jin haushin kanka mutane suna tsane ka haka dai na sani su sun sana su yan uwansu ne ai gwamnati da Boko Haram ba duk ɗaya ba ne bakin su a haɗe gaskiya ba zai iya ce ma ta ya zai yi ba da sun samu ne ya yake su a kawo zaman lafiya do ana kawo traditional justice ne ko me peace justice ne ko me an kawo yanzu ana magana a kai amma to akwai repentance Boko Haram so an fi ɗaukaka su wani kan da an kashe maka dukiya ka rasa abin gidanka ka rasa abubuwan rayuwanka gwamnati bai kula da kai ba wanda shi ya yi abu fa shi aka ɗauke shi ana biyan shi kuɗi yana aiki how abin is not normal ai bai normal ba ya yi shari'ar adalci gaskiya wanda aka kona mar gida ya biya wanda aka kona mar dukiya inda zai yi wanda ya yi abu da gangan shi za a ɗauka ana ba shi kuɗi da kai wanda naka dukiya ya kashe
The fact is that terrorism in Africa is on the rise and will continue to do so for as long as countries are not honest about what is happening on the ground. When skirmishes and conflicts are given the label of terrorism, it allows the West to get involved for their own reasons and their own agendas. These powers, like the United States, France, and Britain, very often claim they're fighting terrorism in Africa, which is a convenient excuse under which they can hide their operations to extract oil, gas, and minerals, as well as to influence local politics. Well, that brings us to the end of this week's show. We hope you found it interesting. You can, of course, always reach out to us on one of our social media platforms. Until we're with you again next week, from me and the team here in Kenya, Kwaheri, goodbye.